Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable Supreme Court of Texas is now in session pursuant to adjournment.
Thank you. Be seated. This morning, the court has three causes on its oral submission docket. In the order of their presentation, they are Fredonia State Bank et al. Versus General American Life Insurance Company from Nacogdoches County, the City of Lancaster and I Ken Chambers and Evelyn Chambers, individuals and ex-friends of Bradley Chambers from Dallas County, and Young Men's Christian Association of Metropolitan Dallas and others versus the Honorable Eric Boyer from Original Mandamus Proceedings. The times which the court has allotted for each of these arguments have been designated to counsel. Counsel for petitioners or relators may reserve a certain portion of that time for rebuttal by so advising the marshal of our court. The court will take a brief recess in between the presentation of each of these arguments and will conclude the arguments before the lunch break. These arguments are being recorded for the convenience of the court. If you desire to listen to a tape of the argument, you may make application with our clerk. The court is ready to hear argument from petitioner in Fredonia State Bank versus General American Life.
May it please the court, Mr. Charles Ward, we will present argument for the petitioner. Mr. Ward has reserved 5 minutes for the vote.
May it please the court. Sitting with me at council table today is Giles Rusk, who is the trial attorney in this case. We represent the estate of Clater Blake, who died in 1985. At the time of his death, he owned two life insurance policies issued by General American Life Insurance Company. They refused to pay on those policies because of certain alleged misrepresentations made by Mr. Blake in his application for insurance. Issue of fact as to whether or not the application which contained this alleged misrepresentation had been provided to Mr. Blake at the time the policy was issued. The issue was important because Article 21.35 of the Texas Insurance Code requires that applications accompany policies and has certain specific consequences if an insurance company fails to comply with that requirement. Those consequences were described by this court in Johnson versus Prudential Insurance Company, consequence being that if the insurance company fails to deliver the application with the policy, that it is not entitled to rely on any representations in that application to defeat coverage. The corollary to that rule discussed in Johnson is that if the insurance company complies with Article 21.35, and serves or delivers with the policy the application containing the representation, questions and answers of the insured, and the insured does not thereafter notify the insurance company of any misrepresentations in that application, he is bound by those, he has ratified those false statements, and it is evidence of such representation. The court also described the purpose served by this statute in Johnson, that purpose being to get the entire contract before the insured so that he can clarify any mistakes or misrepresentations that were made in the application process while the insurance was being sold to him. Now in this case, the fact that it was in dispute whether or not this application actually accompanied both these policies. An issue was submitted to the jury, and the jury found that in fact these applications had not been delivered to Clater Blake with these policies. The Court of Appeals has disregarded this issue as immaterial and has done so on the basis of a Fifth Circuit decision in Wise versus Mutual Life Insurance Company. After disregarding these issues on the jury finding that these applications have not been delivered to the insured, the Court of Appeals then proceeded to rely on the contents of the application to support the elements of General American's misrepresentation defense. It used the application expressly to establish as a matter of law that the insured had made the representation. If Article 21.35 applies, this was an erroneous application of that representation in the application. Now, the reason that the court disregarded this, to say, is the Fifth Circuit's opinion in Wise versus Mutual Life Insurance Company. And that case does, in fact, say that Article 21.35 does not apply to life insurance policies. It doesn't really describe its reasoning other than to say that it is relying on an earlier Texas case, the case of First Texas Prudential Insurance Company versus Pedigo. And it's not clear exactly from reading Article 21.35 why it should not apply to life insurance companies and require life insurance companies to deliver applications with the policies, because the face of the statute that apparently applied to life insurance. Pedigo, however, contrary to what the Fifth Circuit says, did apply Article 21.35 or its predecessor to life insurance companies. It said it did apply, and that the presumption did require, that the statute did require that the application accompany the policy, and if it didn't, that the insurance company could not rely on those representations. The kicker in Pedigo was, however, to limit that statute to insurance policies issued before December 31st, 1909. So its holding actually was that 21.35, or its predecessor, applied to life insurance, but only policies issued before 1910, December 31, 1909. And the reason it came to this conclusion was by relying on an earlier case, a Commission of Appeals decision in American National Insurance Company versus Welsh, which had said that another provision in Article 21.35 dealing with incontestability was in conflict with a subsequent statute enacted in 1910, and that to resolve this conflict, it would apply the incontestability clause of Article 21.35 to policies issued prior to 1910, and would apply this new statute to policies thereafter. What Pedigo then did was take this specific limitation on Article 21.35 and apply it generally to this particular provision, which required that insurance companies deliver applications with the policy, and the consequences which flow from that being that they cannot rely on the contents of those applications unless they are delivered.
Didn't the legislature recently amend, reenact 21.35, 1989?
Yes, Your Honor, they did. This statute was...
A little disingenuous to say it only applied to policies issued before 1909 when they enacted it in 1989, wouldn't it?
I would think so, Your Honor. The statute was originally enacted in 1903 and stayed in the same form until 1989. At that point in time, the legislature amended it and added one word to actually limit the application of the statute solely to life insurance. Before, it applied generally to all contracts of insurance. Every contract of insurance required the insurance company, unless otherwise provided by laws, provided by the statute, required that the application actually be delivered with the policy. In 1989, the legislature thought that was too broad and limited the statute then to solely apply to life insurance. Another decision which I think is helpful in this area, and we cite in our brief, is Washington versus Reliable Life Insurance Company. It's an interesting case because, as I read the respondent's brief, they also think it supports their position. But in that case, there were actually three policies of insurance, two of which I think are important for our discussion here today. And both of those, as both of those policies of insurance, this court reversed and remanded those two policies for new trial. And the policies were somewhat different in that one policy had attached to it the application. The other policy did not have it attached. This was undisputed. Unlike our trial, this was an undisputed issue of fact. One policy had the application with it, one did not. And the way this court treated those two policies, I think, is informative for the application of Article 2135, although that statute is not actually ever mentioned in that opinion. As to the policy with the application attached, the court, in reviewing the jury's determination, and the jury had found as to both those policies that the insured, the lady, had made no representation of fact, although there were two applications in evidence which did show some false representations. But as to the policy that had the application attached, the court said that there was a conclusive presumption that the insured had ratified these statements, and so the jury's determination of that issue was erroneous as a matter of law. That was the policy with the application attached. Now, as to the policy that did not have the application attached, the court viewed the issue somewhat differently. The issue there was whether there was a factual issue of whether she had made a representation. And as luck would have it, the court of the insurance company had preserved a factual sufficiency point below, which the Court of Appeals had not reached. So the Supreme Court said that it was required to remand that the case to the Court of Appeals for its determination of that factual issue. However, because it was going to remand the other policy, it decided that in the interest of justice, it would remand both of them. So I think what the case shows is that you can conclude that by the insurance company, by complying with Article 2135 and delivering the application with the policy and the insured never making any clarification as to misrepresentations in that application, the insured is bound by those representations. But if the application is not provided, then the insured is not bound. And the difference between that case and our case is that in that case it was undisputed that the application, which was not attached to the policy, came into evidence, and there was no objection. In our case, we didn't object either, but we had no objection because there was a factual issue of whether or not that application had actually been provided to the insured.
If you're correct and it has to be attached, we'd have to remand the case to the CA for a factual sufficiency review, wouldn't we?
Well, unless you find some merit in the point that you haven't granted, I think that's correct. I see my time is up.
Any other questions?
Mr. Lord, just expanding on what Justice Corner just asked, if we were to hold, as you urged, that the reliance by the Court of Appeals on the Fifth Circuit case of Wise was incorrect, and that any defenses as to misrepresentations were not proper as because of jury finding, a remand to the Court of Appeals would be proper for the Court of Appeals to consider the factual sufficiency points that were not addressed. But are those points material, or is the case in shape to render?
Well,
is it possible for the court to render the case?
Yes, I definitely think this court can render in this case, but I think it would have to decide in my favor, in our favor, as to the preservation of the factual sufficiency points in their motion for new trial.
Well, if you would disregard Justice Enix's opinion on the Solar, not a good view on the matter, if we were able to overcome that, the point, what would be the impact of that? We would say that the Court of Appeals should have sent it back for rebriefing based on the PECO?
Well, no. The way the Court of Appeals has reversed it at present is to rely on the application as evidence supporting the misrepresentation defense. And that is absolutely essential to their opinion, that there is no representation without that application. And they're not entitled under 2135 to rely on that. So we take that element of evidence out of the case. Now, if there's other evidence that they're relying on to establish representation, there's certainly, I don't know what it is, but if there is other evidence, they can make a factual attack as to whatever that evidence would be, and perhaps tell us what that evidence is.
But the misrepresentations are only in the application for insurance.
I'm sorry?
Are there other misrepresentations alleged other than those contained in the application for insurance?
I'm unaware of any other source of misrepresentation in this case other than the application, the medical history that was in the application, which was not given back to the insurer.
The trial issues relating to whether or not the application was attached to the policy, and whether or not there were misrepresentations in that application were both submitted to the jury, were they not?
Yes, they were.
The jury found that the application was not attached.
Correct.
And the jury also found that there were no misrepresentations in the application.
Right.
Is that correct?
That's right. And that issue was defined with the five elements that the insurance company had to prove to establish its affirmative defense of misrepresentation.
Thank you.
But the jury, but the Court of Appeals has the constitutional power to weigh and do a look at the whole record, and they found that the overwhelming weight of the evidence against your client in this, on this issue.
As to one element of this.
As to intent to deceive.
As to intent to deceive, they said that the case should be remanded because the great weight of the evidence was against the jury finding as to that one element. It was the insurance company's burden to prove all five elements. So there has to be evidence on all five. Is there evidence of representation, if you take it into the application? Is there evidence of reliance? What we're saying is the insurance company was not entitled to rely on that application because they didn't give it back to the insurer. Can it be material? Can anything that the insured said in that application be material if they did not provide that application to the insured? I submit to the court it cannot be material unless you follow the dictates of Article 2135.
Did the Court of Appeals consider any other evidence other than the application in reaching its conclusion?
Well, it considered other evidence when it was dealing with the issue of intent. It went into...
I'm talking about misrepresentation.
Not that I'm agreeing.
In other words...
Well, misrepresentation has all those elements in it.
If the rule does not permit, 2135 does not permit the application to be considered and at least creates no presumption as to credibility of the answers given there. And that's what the Court of Appeals relied upon in reaching its conclusion. And they would have some difficulty reaching that same conclusion without that application.
I think they would, Your Honor.
If the court were to find that the reliance on Weiss was misplaced and Article 2135 does in fact must be complied with and not insurance policy, is that dispositive of the whole case?
Well, I think there is one other factual issue out there, and I'm sure Mrs. Poland is going to discuss this. The other issue is the factual sufficiency of the jury's finding of whether that application actually was delivered to the insurer. And that one hadn't been reached. I mean, it's been skipped over because of the application of Watts. And that's the one I think we're entitled to rebrief under the Petco, and I will, I guess, go into that in rebuttal unless the court wants me to go into that now. But the issue of whether or not factual sufficiency of the evidence of whether that application actually did get to the insurer is still, I think, preserved.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from respondent.
May I please the court and the court of that argument to respondent?
May it please the court. Mr. Lord's statement to you that if Article 2135 applies, then the Court of Appeals was wrong in basing its reversal on the application's attachment to the policy at the time of the delivery of the policy is, I believe, the main issue herein. And the important point to note about the argument is that 2135 did not apply in this case to this application and to the policies that were issued in July or April of 1985. Article 2135.
Counsel, if it did, then do you lose?
No, I don't believe that we do, even if it did apply at that time, because of the fact that the factual sufficiency of the evidence was reviewed by the court on numerous items other than the application. This was a very, very lengthy trial with numerous pieces of evidence and over a 2,000-word statement of facts. And, of course...
Was there any other claimed evidence of misrepresentation other than the application?
Well, of course, the application was the takeoff place for the fact that the insured, in looking for the insurance itself, made these misrepresentations, as we claim, and those were clearly reflected in the application. There was a wealth of information from interested parties and non-interested parties at the trial level who testified concerning Mr. Blake's health history, his mental health history, his financial circumstances, whether or not a person is inclined to commit suicide in these kinds of circumstances. So there was a great, great deal more of information.
But if you cannot consider the application, there's no way you can prevail in this case, is there?
Other than your consideration of the other information concerning Mr. Blake and his health history and the fact that he made misrepresentations in that application, you cannot.
But that's my whole question.
Sure.
I mean, if you don't have any other evidence that he made a misrepresentation than the application.
That's correct.
So if Article 2135 applies and that application cannot be considered because of the alleged failure of the insurance company to return it, you lose.
That's correct. But I believe the law clearly reflects that 2135 did not apply at the time these policies were issued, and the amendment, which begins on September 1st, 1989, clearly qualifies that to say this applies only to life insurance policies and only to claims that were made after September 1st, 1989. Mr. Blake's death occurred in December of 1985, and a claim was made with the filing of this lawsuit, and obviously before that time in December of 1986. I think the important thing for this court to note is that...
Ms. Butler, what amendment are you talking about?
The amendment to 2135.
You say it became effective in 1989?
For claims made after September 1st, 1989, yes, sir.
So if this claim had been made last week, there'd be no question that you lose.
You're right, according to 2135 today. But I think what's important about that is that it is this very court which has recognized that 2135 and its predecessor articles did not apply to life insurance policies prior to the amendment, which became effective on September 1st, 1989.
Counsel, now I'm confused. The Court of Appeals held that the jury finding that it was not attached was immaterial because the statute applied. You also had a factual insufficiency point that the Court of Appeals did not reach. I thought I heard Mr. Lord say that even if he's right, it still has to go back for a factual insufficiency review of the Court of Appeals on whether the jury's answer that the application was not attached was against the great weight and preponderance of the evidence. Do you agree with that or disagree?
I agree and disagree. I believe that, yes, it would have to go back to the Court of Appeals for a resolution of the factual sufficiency question with regard to that cross point, whether or not it was attached or not attached. Disagree with counsel for the petitioner who stated that the Wise Court stated that 2135 applied. Clearly the Wise Court went back to the Pettigo Court and said this does not apply. The predecessor articles to 2135 do not apply here, and we don't know why they didn't apply to life insurance particularly. Clearly in Johnson, the exception that was made is because Johnson involved a group life insurance policy. In Washington versus Reliable, this court states two applications on two of those policies were not attached, and we're going to remand to them for a consideration of sufficiency arguments within that, but it does not preclude the misrepresentation defense. The court qualified that what is important is that if the policy is attached and the predecessor article, which is that which has been used in life insurance policies prior to 2135, has always given that option if the policy may be attached or the policy may not be attached. And if the policy is attached, then the conclusive presumption against the insured applies that he knew what the terms of his application were and that he ratified them. And I think this is the most important thing for this court to consider is that in Washington versus Reliable, in Robinson versus Reliable Life Insurance Company. In Cox versus National Life Insurance Company, which was an NRE case in the Beaumont court, each of the courts clearly stated this application was not attached to the policy at its time of delivery. Because it was not, that conclusive presumption does not apply against the insured, but it does not preclude the use of the application for the misrepresentation defense. And that's the important distinction that was made to all policies on which claims were issued, on which claims were made prior to the amendment of this policy. With regard to the claim that the evidence was insufficient, whether or not the applications were attached to the policies at the time of their delivery, which was considered by the Court of Appeals and stated by them to be immaterial in light of the Wise holding, I think an important thing to note concerning that is that the reason the court sustained respondents' cross points on that was because the petitioner did not challenge the statement of facts that was put forward by the respondent in their brief concerning the attachment policy. And this was the decision of the petitioner, the appellant, whether or not he was going to challenge them. And clearly the law states that if a party does not challenge the statement of fact as put forward by the other party, by the opposing party in its brief, then the court must accept or may accept that statement of fact is correct. That's according to the dictates of what is now Rule 74F, of course, of the appellate procedure, and at the time was Rule 419 of the Rules of Civil Procedure.
Mr. Stolen, would you refresh my memory specifically what statement in your brief that's material to this decision, the decision in this case was not rebutted, you say was not rebutted or challenged by opposing counsel in their brief?
On page 7 of respondent's brief, we have addressed this question. I may not understand you. If I'm sorry, if I don't.
Well, you made, you know, 74F allows parties to recite facts about a case, and if they're not rebutted by the other counsel, they're accepted as true.
Right.
What material fact that's important to the disposition of this case was made by you or your counsel or your side that was not rebutted by the other side?
I have quite a lengthy...
Are there several?
Numerous.
Well, I'm familiar with your brief, but I want to consider, you know, let's cut through the shaft. What do you consider is important among the many facts that are material?
Most important, I think, is the fact that there is not any evidence, any probative evidence that says that the applications were not attached. All of the evidence that was adduced at trial speaks in terms of persons who have reviewed, if they reviewed a copy of the policy, they reviewed only a copy of the policy. And I think that many times, unfortunately, petitioners misstated in their brief what the statement of facts actually revealed, which is that the ex-wife of the man who died in this case reviewed the policy, but she only reviewed a copy of the policy. She didn't know whether or not the application was attached at the time, according to the testimony of the president of the bank who was there with her and who represented the parties, one of the banks, at the trial court level. And most importantly, all of the testimony, which was not rebutted from General American Life Insurance Company, was that there was not one thing ever that brought into question to them that the application was not attached to the policy and that it was their policy to attach applications to life insurance policies at the time of their delivery. There's a great deal of questioning concerning the life insurance agent in Nacogdoches who made the insurance deal and delivered the policies. But the end result of what he had to say was, I do not remember, I do not believe that the application, that the medical portion of the application, I don't remember if I looked at it or not. And he was equivocal on that point. But I think that the other evidence clearly shows that the only other persons who viewed this were persons who reviewed copies of the policies and didn't know for sure whether or not the application was attached. There is no conclusive evidence that the application was attached.
Well, see, I understand your contentions. General American Life made a statement, its application for writ of error, and in its brief, that the application for the life insurance policy was attached to the policy. Correct? That's your position at trial?
Yes, sir.
There is a jury finding against you on that issue. Despite the jury finding against you on that issue, you're saying that it was Fredonia State Bank's obligation to nonetheless, in the response to your application for error, but Rivera say that your recitation of the facts is incorrect. Is that what you're arguing?
Yes, sir. It is, exactly.
And because they failed to do that, the penalty is to, for this court and for the appellate court to disregard the jury finding. Is that your argument? Or is the remedy for the Court of Appeals to send it back or to for you to make that point to the Court of Appeals or for the Court of Appeals to order give them the opportunity to rebrief?
Well, I think that in the cases that I've read since in Petco that talk about this issue of the rebriefing, seems to me that one of the things that they come down on is the fact that when the entire opinion is based on a point of error which has not been briefed before and was not briefed or addressed by the party, if an entire affirmance or reversal is based on that, then in the interest of fairness, more leeway is given to a party to rebrief again and to send it back to the Court of Appeals. I think that...
So what is your position on that? Is your position that they should have been ordered or should we reorder them to rebrief or send it back to the Court of Appeals for the Court of Appeals to rebrief? What is your position?
I believe that they clearly decided that we are not going to attack this because we don't believe that this is important because the jury answered question number four that Mr. Blake did not misrepresent or make misrepresentations in his application. I don't know why they chose not to challenge it, but it seems to me kind of a cart before the horse argument in one way that if they didn't choose at the time when they had the opportunity to challenge in any regard what has been said by the other party, us, in our statement of facts, then they get another shot of it when they find out that the Court of Appeals didn't agree with them.
So if I understand your argument, you're saying the court, because of their failure to challenge this, whether the application for insurance was attached or not attached, that we ought to disregard the jury finding contrary to your client. Is that your argument?
I believe that you should affirm the Court of Appeals, which disregarded the jury finding contrary to the evidence that was considered and detailed by the Court of Appeals in its opinion.
But that was not the basis of reversal for the Court of Appeals. The Court of Appeals reversed on a different ground.
Right, it did. And that's what I was saying. It didn't reverse just on the one ground that that they were going to accept the statement of facts as the respondent put it forward because the other party did not challenge it.
It's unclear to me whether the Court of Appeals reverse based on pool analysis or because 74M. What is your reading of the Court of Appeals opinion and judgment?
I believe the Court of Appeals reversed the case on the basis that the evidence was factually insufficient to support the jury's verdict that Mr. Blake did not make material misrepresentations in his application.
And if we were to find that 2135 applies, where does that leave us? That the Court of Appeals was incorrect in relying on why.
It leaves me in a real bad position because if 2135 applies, then the use of that application was not
proper
there to be used, correct, by the Court of Appeals. And so that really is the crux of my argument. 2135, as this court clearly has held in Washington and other cases, and was pointed out, for example, in the Cox opinion in the Beaumont Court of Appeals, has not required that an insurance application be accompanied, insurance policy be accompanied by the application at the time of delivery. That's been optional. Article 2124 clearly made that an option. It was not until this qualification and codification and amendment effective September 1st, 1989. And that's what the Wise Court says, too. This is not our thing to do. This is up to the legislature for it to decide whether or not it wants to make 2135 an attachment applicable.
Any other questions? Thank you, Council.
Thank you.
First point I want to address is Texas Rule of Appellate Procedure 74F. It does not apply in this case. It does not apply in this case because we were the appellants, and it provides that the appellant's statement of facts may be accepted by the court if it is not challenged by the opposing party. Now, what happened to the trial court?
Well, Mr. Lord, there were two appellants. Nobody was satisfied with the Court of Appeals decision.
That is correct.
Nobody was really satisfied with the trial court's judgment either. So we had two appellants. Both parties filed cross appeal.
Well, no, we filed the appeal as appellant. They were appellate with cross points.
Does that not make them both appellants?
No, I don't think it's in contemplation of the rule. The rule contemplates a statement of facts which is not challenged. We filed the first brief, and we outlined the evidence in total in that brief. And in that brief, part of the evidence we outlined referred to this insurance agent that sold the policy to Mr. Blake. Now, what their brief said was that he couldn't remember at the time of trial whether or not the application was attached. What the statement of facts at the trial actually disclosed was an evolution in his testimony. He actually told the bank president at the time that this case was going on that when he delivered the policy, the application was not attached to it. And we had to read his deposition into the record at trial to disclose this to the jury. What he said was, and he admitted this conversation with the bank president, which he said that the application was not there when I delivered the policy. At his deposition, though, he said, I don't remember any longer, but he admitted that previous statement. And the reason I don't remember any longer is, in the interim, I've talked to General American, and they assure me it was there. Now, see, these are the statements of fact that we had in our original brief. Now, when it came time to reply to Appellee's cross points, we said the evidence is sufficient, and we didn't repeat the statement, these points of evidence that we'd already raised. Now, if we were required to, I think in Petco, offer this opportunity to pull those pieces of evidence out of our brief and put them back in the second one. But that Rule 74F also says that repetition is to be avoided, prolixity of statement is to be avoided. We've already said it once. Did we have to say it again? If we did, then we were perfectly willing to, and we'll rebrief it if the Court of Appeals wants us to, and I think we probably will if this case is remanded, because we'll certainly make it clear to the Court of Appeals that we were able to do the first time. There were other evidence.
Assuming that everything has been preserved in the motions for rehearing, the most relief we can grant is to remand to the Court of Appeals.
Well, I hate to keep going back to that point that y'all haven't granted on, but I think that one can.
Which is the preservation of error in the motion for rehearing?
A new trial, you mean?
Yes.
A new trial. So that one could result in addition. Actually, see, we have points in the Court of Appeals that haven't been addressed, and although we're not eager to go back there, there are some other points there that we'd like to get some leave on, and we really haven't brought them up before this court. We've just brought, I think, the points that are important to the jurisprudence of the state. There's other evidence in our brief dealing with the other insurance agent, Don Weir, who had also had some instances where he'd gotten policies from General American that didn't have applications attached. There's other evidence in the record other than their statement, which we had before the Court of Appeals, and which it did not consider, relying on Rule 74F, which I don't believe applies in this case. The other waiver argument, and the way that Mrs. Poland applies Rule 2135 is that it's conclusive evidence if the application is delivered. And if it isn't delivered, it's some evidence. Well, I think the rule actually is, as Washington explains, that it is some evidence if it comes into evidence. And that the party who relies on 2135 can keep it out of evidence. And the reason we couldn't keep it out of evidence is because of the disputed issue of fact. And Rule of Evidence 104B, which requires the admission of evidence if its admissibility depends upon the existence of a fact which can't be established until the jury comes back and establishes that fact. So we couldn't keep it out until we knew whether or not it was attached. We didn't know whether it was attached until the jury told us that it was not, which was our position. And after that point in time, it was no longer any evidence that the Court of Appeals could rely on thereafter to set aside the jury's verdict.
How about Article 21.24?
21.24 says that the contract, that the insurance company shall give the insurer the entire contract, and that entire contract can be the policy, or it can be the policy and the application. Gives, I think, the insurance company an option to put either the policy as the entire contract or both documents. Now, the second question is, what is the consequence if they elect just to put the policy? And I say the consequence is they live and die to what the policy says, and they can't rely on the application. That's because 2135 makes it a requirement that the insurance company put the application with the policy if it intends to make that part of the contract, and thereafter intends to rely on any representations in that application to defeat coverage.
Mr. Lord, the opposing counsel argues that 2135 applies only after September 1, 1989, to life insurance policies. And since this occurred in 84 and 85, 2135 does not apply to this case. What is your response?
That the Wise decision is incorrect. That Article 21...
She's talking about an amendment of 3135.
Correct. But the Wise decision says that Article 2135, prior to that amendment, did not apply to life insurance and incorporated the Pettigrew analysis, and that's totally wrong. That analysis is totally wrong. Our position is that 2135 applied to life insurance when it was enacted in 1903, and this little differentiation made in 1930 that it was pre-1909 policies and not 1910 and thereafter policies is just erroneous.
You're saying that it applies to life insurance policies after September 1st, only after September 1st, 1989, only if Wise is correct.
That's right.
And that it only applied under Wise, the policies issued before 1909. So
but
we have
Wise
an
didn't say
80-year
that.
Hiatus. Well, Pettigrew.
Pettigrew said that. Wise right. just decided, since there weren't any life insurance policies out there not any
right.
longer from that date, that it probably didn't apply to any of them.
There'd be an 80-year hiatus.
It would be a lot of premium.
The legislature left there, if that was the case.
That's great. Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The court will now take a brief recess.